You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oran Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren. With me today is...
Wes.
And joining us, returning from the distant past of the podcast, is Reese.
Hello.
Welcome.
Those of you who are newer listeners, Reese has been with us before, and they have also written an article for us, which was very excellent, and they were at a couple of our panels at Geek Girl Con. So they are an old hand returning in Mythgreen's time of need.
Yes, blessing us with expertise.
Yeah.
Huzzabi.
All right. So today we are talking about through lines in RPGs. And for a quick definition, a through line is... basically, whatever the story is about, that's the through line. Whatever it is that, like, the most important thing, the central plot thread, the core of the story, has a lot of different names. It's usually the problem that's introduced at the beginning and resolved at the end. Like, the threat of the Death Star is the through line of Star Wars, the first Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, even though we don't know it's the Death Star yet, that's what the first sequence is about. They're running away with the plans of the Death Star, and then they conclude it in the climax and they blow up the Death Star. Woo!
Yeah, that sounds so, about right. But yeah. we did do a podcast on it. So if anybody needs a full refresher, I think they can dig that up.
Okay. So So I've and I've also written an article about it, and so is Chris. But back when we called it a central plot thread, because we've called this a couple of different things over the years. But anyway, so we're talking about through lines in role playing games. As we know, through role playing games are a little different than your standard like prose medium because of those rascally players and their free will and they're wanting to do their own thing. I know.
Why do they keep ruining my story?
Okay, so first I'll put this to both of you, but you first, Reese, as the guest. How much in a role playing game? How much do you value an overarching story of some kind?
Very much so. I mean. Just kind of like in any media, I don't want something that's completely prone to meander. So having at least some sort of, you know, overarching plot, whether that stays the same or in an RPG, what's more likely is it shifts and grows and adapts to what the players do. It's really important to kind of give some sense of accomplishment. Otherwise, it becomes Quest Simulator 3000 with no real point.
I'm going to say probably yes. And I'll tell you why. If I'm running a game and creating a world, I might not quite know what my, like, big through line is because I'm anticipating like a longer campaign with multiple sessions. And so I might use like a couple sessions to start teasing one out. And the players will pick up on like there's recurring NPCs or there might be like clues. And I'm kind of using individual almost like barely connected one shots to try to build up a larger through line because I'm still not entirely sure how my players are going to like be responding. So like I do agree that there should be a through line, but like it can be a lot of work putting one together. And that might be where like if we're talking about RPGs that don't like if you're doing a one shot, then you should have a through line for that one shot. I mean, obviously, but if you're running like a game where, you know, the PCs are all, you know, they're detectives and they get assigned cases and like they can go do those cases and then you can start feeding in that maybe there is something like bigger, more corrupt, more sinister going on over time as it comes to you. So that's just kind of my like side note. If you're wanting to plan this, you can take smaller steps, I think.
I think that's accurate. Like especially at the beginning, you might not like want to bet too many chips on a particular through line because what if the players turn out not to be interested in it, right? It's like, oh well, so you know, I think it's totally reasonable to be like to be very vague at the beginning. It's like, okay, so we start the game with you guys are like in a town and you discover that magic is real. Okay, that's interesting. And you don't really know what the through line is at first because you put like a series of smaller plots, and as you figure out what the players are interested in, then you like build something bigger in the background. And I mean, yeah, like, you know, that's not too different from a story like Star Wars that doesn't immediately tell us Death Star, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, you
know, like, yeah, the first thing that happens in Star Wars isn't Princess Leia turning to the camera and be like, guys, the Death Star is a thing. We have to fight it, right? Like, the Death Star is the through line from the beginning, but the audience doesn't immediately know about it, right? Do you guys think that system makes a difference in role in through lines? Like, are the mechanics of the system going to influence that at all?
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer, so I'm hoping you guys do.
Yeah. I feel like depending on how dedicated your players are to making, and how dedicated you are as a GM to making the through line either more or less prominent, I think you can make systems work better for that. Something like Primetime Adventures, which mm-hmm. is one that I've gotten to play with you running, Oren, which is super fun, is definitely more geared towards supporting a story. Whereas, you know, if you're going to get into something more mechanics heavy, it won't be set up to support that, but I definitely think you can bend it to do what you want.
Yeah. And then there are systems like Delta Green. It is not as well suited for through lines because Delta Green is set up specifically with the idea that each mission you go on is kind of self-contained.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, you know, you can do it. I know GMs who have done it. They like, you know, you build things like, the first mission you go on, you run into like a weird cult, and that weird cult has a statue of a god in the background you don't recognize. And then like, over the course of a few sessions, you run into that statue a few more times. But it's not as natural because it's like each mission is kind of its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, the second you said that, I was thinking about, well, like the Call of Cthulhu, but also Trail of Cthulhu. And just, yeah, some systems are built more for kind of like a one-off. And I was trying to think what makes that. And I guess it's like how much, like what, if the system builds in growth potential for the player characters, it's almost like encouraging you to keep going
mm-hmm.
for a while, right? But in some systems, Trail of Cthulhu does this, you just get points and you deplete points over the course of your adventure and you're not supposed to get them back. So
yeah,
have fun because you're done.
Yeah, Trail of Cthulhu seems to be built specifically with the idea that your characters will burn out after a certain number of sessions, as they literally have no points left to spend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that one's on the extreme side. On the other side, you have systems that, to varying degrees of success, try to mechanically create a through line.
Mm-hmm.
That this is always tricky. Like Burning Empires does this, mm-hmm. Where in theory the through line of Burning Empires is what happens to your planet. Like, does it get invaded by the Valen, which are like, you know, the Yurks from Animorphs, but for grownups. It's like that's the through line, and there's this whole mechanic for like, does your planet get conquered or not, that you like roll for at the end of each session to see how each side is doing. And it's a little clumsy. Like in my experience when I've played that game, I tend to avoid it just because it's like, it's kind of constraining when like you need to be able to adapt to what's going on in the session.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea. I'm open to seeing systems do it better.
Yeah. I like that. I know that the fifth edition Dungeons and Dragons stuff,
mm-hmm.
they've fleshed out a lot more options when you make characters at the start, right? Where you set your like your flaws, ideals, and bonds. And for like, you know, I guess if you're having through lines inside through lines, then there's like the through lines for each individual character. And if the characters are willing to actually explore the bonds that they choose, mm-hmm. then like that provides like, you know, a structure from the start with an option to like go explore that. I guess I guess that kind of counts.
Well, I mean, you have through lines within through lines, right? You're like, your plot is fractal. it's, you know, it's plots all the way down. And like having built-in character arcs is certainly an interesting way to do that. That's not going to be a through line for your entire campaign, probably, but it will give your character the feeling of progression, right? And in a way that's often more satisfying than like getting some experience points and like, well, I'm a better hacker today than I was yesterday because I spent some points and the numbers say I'm a better hacker now.
I got real good at this one type of hacking. Go me.
Yeah, that's... But yeah, I think so for like for an overall campaign through line, I think from my experience, and it sounds like you guys are mostly on board with this, is that most players are going to expect an overarching plot of some kind. They're going to want their story to feel like it's building to something. Yeah. That doesn't mean that like every session has to be about hunting the main villain, right? You can have side plots and what have you. But I do feel like there will be, if you, especially in a long game, like if your campaign runs for 6 months or a year and you get to the end and you're like, okay, guys, well, that was the last session. And it's like, wait, that was the last session? Isn't there like a final boss or something? And it's like, eh.
This was nothing but 10 beach episodes. Why?
Yeah, I would also follow that up that like whether or not you're intentionally building like a larger through line, I think players come with the expectation, like Oren mentioned, and they'll start like exploring and noticing things that you might not even be intending. Like, right, like you'll just like have this kind of there and they'll be like, oh my gosh, what is the meaning behind that etching in the door? You know, it's like, okay.
It was for aesthetics. Nope, not anymore.
And that's good. You want them to buy into it, right?
I had that in a campaign like a long time ago. I was playing in a 7th C campaign, and I think our GM just didn't have a through line. Like, for him, this was just a series of basically one-shots with the same characters. But, like, we thought there was a through line. We were like, okay, so the first time we did this, we were in Avalon, and there were, like, some mercenaries that we had to fight because they were trying to steal Shakespeare's play. Not actually Shakespeare, but, you know, the equivalent of Shakespeare in the 7th C setting. And it was like, okay. And then we went to 7th C Venice and, like, had to fight some dudes who were going to overthrow somebody. But there was a theater there, too. So, like, clearly we're dealing with some kind of theater mastermind, right? And it was like, no, that's not what's happening, guys. It's like, oh, no, but that sounds cool. Can that be what's happening now? So yeah, that was a thing. That if you don't have one, you don't have to like come to the game being like, this is what my through line's going to be. But I would definitely recommend that if nothing else, like if you're a sandbox style GM who like likes to put a world before the players and like see what they do, like take note of what they do and build off of that, right? Like if they're interested enough in the succession of this castle and like who gets it, then like make that part of, like, make that the plot or something, right? Like, pick whatever they're interested in and run with it. Because otherwise it will feel like there isn't, like, it will feel like what they're doing isn't, like, isn't paying off. Like, that sense of satisfaction at the end is really important.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and I think that's why we like to, why we choose systems in general to, like, share stories and adventures. There needs to be some, like, players need to know that there's structure, right? And we all prefer varying degrees of it, but I think we all definitely value knowing that there is a structure to the game that we're playing, and that includes where it's going.
Yeah,
like we want to feel like we got to the end and like what's happening at the end is bigger and more intense than where we started at the beginning, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
Role-playing, one thing that you can do with role-playing games that it fits fairly well is the idea of sequential story arcs of like, you know, it's like this, it's like, okay, so let's like these first 10 sessions are going to be you guys cleaning up the streets of Waterdeep, and that's the arc. And then, you know, that's like a full story that has escalation and climax and it's interesting and cool. And then after that, you could go and be like, okay, the next story is about you, you know, helping this dragon track down all of the people who stole her treasure because they're rude, and you guys are doing a reverse adventure now. Enjoy that. and like, that doesn't necessarily have to be directly connected to the Waterdeep story. I mean, you know, it's like, I think your players will be okay with that if it's like, you have one arc, okay, we finished that arc, now we're doing another arc, and that has its own through line. So I think that that is also acceptable in role-playing games. What do you guys think?
I would have to agree with that. Obviously, not every little thing has to be connected to some higher thing, mm-hmm. especially when it's a matter of fleshing out the world your characters are inhabiting. I would love to see, you know, what's going on over at this small island versus this mainland that we've kind of done a big exploration arc for, and maybe that doesn't completely feed into the grander story, but it still gives a sense of exploration, it gives a sense of something more real, especially mm-hmm. if you can even then take maybe one or two characters that or NPCs that your characters have latched onto and say bring them back somewhere later on.
Yeah, players really like feeling like they've influenced the world, like mm-hmm. what they've done matters. And so, like, you know, if we go back to my example, the reverse dragon story where you are getting treasure back for the dragon, that doesn't have to be like a direct follow-up, but like, it's going to be really helpful if they meet people who are like, hey, we've heard of you, you guys cleaned up the streets of Waterdeep. Like, that is going to change the way we interact.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, so like, that way they feel like it's like, yeah, okay, that stuff in the past actually happened, and it's not just like something that we remember and that nobody else noticed.
It wasn't in a void.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One kind of follow-up to that then, I'm curious what you two think maybe about player expectations. So if their deeds are acknowledged, you know, as these sessions continue, and you know, like, as a plot builds up to its climax, right, like, the stakes definitely like keep increasing, and mm-hmm. do you think you know, or when you all sit down to play like a role-playing game, mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, I mean, you know, the pace and general enthusiasm can greatly vary. So I'm curious, like, with this, to what extent you should constantly be like raising stakes as they get like closer to their goal, right? It's like, oh, you're coming mm-hmm. up on the climax of your through line, you gotta, you know, or mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. is it fine to maybe like, you know, put that through line aside for a bit and, you know, have like just a jaw sesh and relax and have them go, like, I don't know, clean up a community park and show that they can do more than like recover treasure.
Well, I personally think that's at least somewhat partially dictated by reading the room from session to session.
Yeah.
Of course you want to come with a plan in hand, but part of the role of the GM is to be adaptable. And if you get to your meeting and everyone is just super exhausted and it doesn't seem like any sort of big build is going to be particularly impactful that week, then yeah, do a jaw session. Like, just let them relax and have some time to play without being super emotionally taxed.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead, Reese.
Because at the end of the day, it's to have fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going in and suddenly playing this session is going to feel like a drag, then maybe not doing it for the right reason.
Yeah, and the question of pacing in role-playing games is, as Reese said, very much about like reading what your players are interested in. In general, I think it's a good idea to have little breathers, like, especially if you're playing a game that is more emotionally intense, like if you're playing a game that is based off your characters' like relationships, off of, and like, you know, a story where like your characters are super into, or excuse me, your players are super into their characters, and it's like, yeah, but surprise, your character's best friend is actually the villain. Like, that can certainly be fun, mm-hmm. but it's also emotionally taxing. Yeah. And like with any story, like even with prose stories, it's very useful to have moments of pause where the character, where the audience, in this case the players, can catch their breath and, you know, be ready for the next one. That's why if you look at like the drama, if you like graphed out the drama levels in a story, in like really good stories, they aren't a straight line going up.
Mm-hmm.
They are a jagged series of peaks that mm-hmm. continue in an overly upwardly direction.
Right.
Like the Martian is probably the best example of this I can think of. The Martian is just super good at like raising the stakes, exciting. It's like, okay, now take a minute, just breathe. Everything's fine. Mark Watney is growing potatoes. Exciting. You know, that's like, and that's part of why the Martian is so successful. If you didn't have those breathing moments, it would feel very hard to get through, right? Because it would just be like, you can only balance on the edge of your seat for so long.
Exactly.
Right? And I don't know what the formula is for figuring out exactly how many sessions you should have that are like big building sessions and how many you should have that are, you know, on the more laid back side. I generally wouldn't go with more than one laid back session every two or three more intense sessions, but your, mm-hmm. your mileage may vary depending on the group. I found that it can be very useful to, have a laid back session, right before things get really intense, mm-hmm. You know, similar to the way Deep Space Nine, right before they got into the final, like, series of episodes of the Dominion War, have their episode where the stakes are, we need to help our holodeck friend keep his holo bar.
Woo!
You know, and it's like, okay, it's like a fun episode, but not like, you know, it's a relaxing moment before you jump into the, like, all right, now this is an episode about trying to prevent the Dominion from wiping out an entire planet's civilian population out of spite. That's fun. you know. So you gotta have that little, you know, you gotta have that break, or, like, just, like, letting them recharge a little bit before things get super intense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You can even, some systems actually even build that in with, relative degrees of success. I'm always a fan of Mouse Guard and their player turn, GM turn thing. And the player turn is the perfect opportunity to, like, just let the players, you know, just casually have fun playing their characters and, like, you know, have a scene where they make pancakes and eat pancakes together. You know? Not every group is into their characters enough for that to be fun, but when your group is, that's a perfectly legitimate way to spend a session.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Doesn't Blades in the Dark is, I mean, I think we could probably talk about the extent to which there'd be through lines in that, because you could just be taking on different jobs each time, but that has a very interesting built-in, like, downtime structure, right, where you're supposed to be, like, you know, paying people off or, like, reducing your heat or mm-hmm. all those other kinds of things. So that's kind of an interesting thing where you can't just keep doing, like, big jobs because it'll catch up to you, right?
Well, Blades in the Dark has, I think, more successfully than any other system I've played, gamified the through line,
mm-hmm.
which is, because the through line of Blades in the Dark by default, and you can add more to this if you want to, but by default, the through lines of Blades in the Dark is what happens to your gang.
Yeah,
because it has a very robust system for playing your gang as you rise up through the through the criminal underworld of Duskwall or whatever they call it. It's mm-hmm. definitely not the city from Dishonored 2. Don't you start thinking it is.
Don't definitely not that.
Yeah, not that city, no sir. But anyway, like, because the whole system is very much like, okay, so you did a job and that gave you this many coins and you can, like, purchase a new asset for your gang, but that triggers a reaction from other gangs, and, like, oh, you had to kill some people during the job, that means you have heat, and now you either have to do something to get rid of the heat or deal with the cops. It's, like, very, you know, it's extremely robust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really mm-hmm. wish that its core die mechanic wasn't terrible. I love that game's faction system is so good. I really want to play it, but it's their core die mechanic is just lousy.
Yes, but let us also put a reminder out there that in a previous podcast, we asked for somebody to please run Blades in the Dark, but set it in high school.
Oh, right, my gosh.
High school cliques instead of gangs. Yes. Right. It's like, all right, we're playing as the Goths, and today we will claim the AV Club. Like, there will be no survivors.
I was literally just thinking, claim the AV Club. Good job.
But in addition to, so, like, Blades in the Dark has this extremely robust system of, like, building your gang and, like, you know, putting you in positions where it's, like, you know, now that you're gang level 6, you can't just, like, sit and be gang level 6. You have to, like, deal with the other gangs that want to take your spot and stuff like that, right? But it also has, like, the built-in downtime of, like, all right, you're not out actively on a job. There are still problems you have to deal with, but they are less flashy, right? They're less likely to get you killed. And so you're right. Yeah, that is definitely, like, it has that built in. And to a certain extent, that is largely a resource management system where it's where you have to make decisions about, like, you know, is it worth my character going to jail for a few months so that we can get out, get some heat off, things like that. Right. But it is also a story decision. It melds the two pretty seamlessly.
Yeah. And far more, like, structure to kind of what we're talking about than a few of the other systems that we've mentioned so
right.
far.
Yeah. And of course, the downside to Blades in the Dark is that if you don't want to run a game about a gang or high school clique gaining territory and building their power, it's like, okay, well, you're kind of out of luck, right? Because that's a very specialized game. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, if that's what you're looking for, it does it very well. I was going to say, if you've just gotten off reading, you know, Gentleman Bastards, and you're like, I want to be those guys, it's like, all right, well, here's a game for you.
I want to become the general, the bastard.
Yes.
Nice. So I think if we wanted to, like, advise people on how to, like, set up, a GM wants to set up a game, should we, like, kind of summarize some tips that we could have going forward? If they're like, okay, I need to put this campaign together, I need to have a through line. How would we go about advising this person?
Reese, do you want to start since you are as a guest?
Yeah, sure. I guess first one there is be adaptable. Listen to your players. Even if you don't have something solid going in, that's fine. Look at what they're interested in and follow through on that.
I would say that especially if you're not 100%, if you're not super sure what your through line is going to be yet, either because, like, you're playing it kind of loose, or you're just not sure what your players want exactly. One of the easiest ways to start building a foreshadow is with some kind of mystery, because then, like, the players don't know what it is, and you can change what it is based on what the players find interesting. it's like, hey, we're starting in this city, and, like, the Duke was murdered, and that's weird, and you guys have to investigate, and then leave. You're like, okay, I don't really, you in your head don't know who murdered the Duke yet. You haven't actually decided. And so you find out that the players are, like, super interested in investigating this new, this new sect of worship, because they think it's an evil cult. And you're like, oh, maybe it was an evil cult that murdered the Duke. That's interesting. Let's go there. And so, like, keeping that the threat there but unspecific is very helpful. It, like, really it gives you flexibility while at the same time letting the players feel like they are building towards something.
Yeah, I would second all of that, and the mystery aspect, right? Like, if they, you don't want to keep them in the dark on everything, but, like, the less they know, the more their imaginations are going to really kick in, try to figure out what's going on. And that, as you both mentioned, like, use that to your advantage. I do think though that you should probably, you could probably have a very vague idea of where it might go at the start, but constantly check in after each session, see what the players have given you, and then, you know, revise how the outcome might happen. I think you should definitely have, like, this is the climax. Like, this is what it's all building up to. But unlike, you know, writing a prose story, you can get there with multiple different ways that are probably going to be highly variable all the time. It's nice that you don't have to, like, deliberately plan out, you know, a ladder. It's more like, I don't know, insert other metaphor analogy here.
It's like a web, I would say. Yeah, and the other thing, the last bit of advice I would give is, you know, be prepared to put some kind of weird twist on it and reveal that, oh, this was actually part of something else. Because sometimes the idea that you have for a through line, like, say, you know, your through line, that this idea that you had would be battling this evil warlord, your players might get tired of that. They might just feel like, we've been fighting this warlord for like 5 sessions now. Can't we just like defeat them once and for all? You know, they might, that the warlord might not have the same staying power that you imagined. And so you're like, okay, so all right. So this warlord was going to be my final boss at the end of the campaign, but instead now you guys are going to fight the warlord and he is actually the lieutenant of the dragon that you were working for the whole time.
No!
bringing it back.
All that dragon wants is its treasure back.
We trusted you, dragon.
All right. So we are actually out of time. Thank you, Reese, for joining us.
Thanks, Reese.
Of course. Glad to be back.
All right. Those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythcreants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review on iTunes so we can continue to grow like a swarm of nanites. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean.
This has been the Mythcreant Podcast, opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.